Welcome to the Roots of Success podcast.
We've raised the bar.
Tap into the source of your success through real stories from real people.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
It's time to level up and get to the root of your success.
And now your host, Nate the Great Peterman.
Guys, welcome back to another episode of the Roots of Success podcast. I am your host, Nate the Great, coming at you. And today, we have a very, very special guest, okay? The man, the myth, the legend himself, Steve Orozco. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for coming by, coming through. And I look forward to having this conversation.
Absolutely, bro. I appreciate you taking the time out. I know you're back and forth a lot to Connecticut, out here to LA. And,
yes.
And you might as well just buy a house and a plane now.
Shoot. So, I mean, you know, you're from Pennsylvania, how much cheaper it is to live in New England compared to here. It's crazy.
For real, you could buy it. You could buy a mansion and pay what you paid over there compared to a one bedroom out here.
It's insane. Like this apartment, two bedrooms, 1,100 square feet. It's like $4,000 a month. $4,000 a month is like $750,000 home. I mean, that in Connecticut gets you a fucking monster mansion. Yeah, but still even 25, you get an entire house.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in Connecticut, when I was 24, I actually built my first house.
Really?
So, yeah, it was 3,000 square foot home, and I still remember to this day, my mortgage was $2,505.
Wow.
3,000 square feet, so it's funny that you're saying 2,500. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's incredible. Holy smokes. And, you know, just a little background, I'm going to get one to Steve for the audience, you know.
Yeah.
Steve, he is a former professional fighter and entrepreneur, holding both an MBA and an MSM from Albertus Magnus College.
Correct.
He is uniquely equipped to lead and manage a professional mixed martial arts, MMA-based organization.
Correct.
With Smash Global, that's exactly what he does, developing extravagant events to elevate the sport of MMA. It's no secret that MMA is the fastest growing sport in the world, and his mission is to showcase this exciting, technical, and budding sport in a high-class, sophisticated setting, giving the sport what it truly deserves. Smash Global combines the class and luxury of boxing, the raw excitement of MMA, and the elegance of a black tie gala into one can't-miss event.
Man, that's it.
Quite a smile. So, man, kind of, you know, walk us through a little bit of the early years of Steve. You know, your childhood growing up, and of course, with you being from the East Coast, and I want you to kind of walk us through how you got to where you're at today, and just the childhood that you grew up with, and really talk about some of the fighting, too, my brother. I mean,
yeah,
I gotta watch myself on this episode. You know me? But yeah, brother, do your thing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I had a good childhood. You know, I'm not the kid, I'm not the person that's going to come over here and say, I had this problem and that problem, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, you know, I fell in love with wrestling. You're from Pennsylvania, so wrestling runs deep in PA. I wrestled kids in Pennsylvania. They were tough. But wrestling is what really made me who I am. You know, I found it at an early age, thank God. Most, I think like 99% of the world never finds that one thing that makes them burn inside, like they're passionate about. When you're a kid, you're not exposed to enough things, especially from small town USA. I'm from little Newport, Rhode Island. It's like 25,000 people in the town, very small. And, you know, you just part of your community. When you're a kid, you're like, the difference between that being a child and an adult, for example, is when you're a kid, you can't pick your community. You're just given what you're given. Just beautiful about California, as an adult, you come to California, you can pick your community. You find your circle that you trust and you want to be around and you grow. You don't get to do that back in small town USA. Or as a child, even if you have a child here, and they're just put in the community they're put in. So wrestling is really what built me and is what brought me, you know, into college. It made me so competitive. So it made me work so, can I swear?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
It's so fucking hard. You know, Dan Gable says, once you wrestled everything out, everything else in life is easy. And there's just something about that sport you can ask any wrestler, they're just wired differently because of what it entails. You know, you can't quit. You're accountable for everything. It's only you versus one other person on the mat. You're choosing to compete against somebody else, you know, in a very aggressive manner. So you think, yeah, again, a very simple childhood. I did have to grow up a little faster than other kids. My parents got divorced when I was 12.
Interesting.
So I was 12 years old, but I also had a 2-year-old sister. So my dad actually moved out of state. Just to Connecticut, and we're still super tight, so nothing, no animosity there. My parents are still best friends,
which is great.
Never felt like they were divorced.
That's good. Yeah.
But the hardship of everything was my mom had to go back to school and work full time. A 2-year-old daughter, my sister. So what do you think happened to me? I kind of had to grow up myself. My mom came home; she had to take care of a 2-year-old. So I was always on my own. My mom always says she feels bad about that, but I always say it's what made me so independent. I had to grow a little faster than some of the other kids, but I still had an amazing childhood, thank God. It's all about the environment, you know,
yes.
The community, and again, that's why wrestling is that one sport that I was like, that was my family. So what I love about fighting was the brotherhood within your team. You know, people don't realize what it's like to get in your car and go to practice knowing that you're going to try to fuck your friends up. Right, so before practice, you guys are joking, you're having fun, you guys are, you know, talking about girls or whatever, and then all of a sudden the bell rings and it's game on, and you're really trying to destroy each other. And then when the 2 hours or however long practice is up, you guys are back to being on the mat bullshitting, like that didn't even happen. So it's such like a weird thing that turns on and off. You don't think about it during it, but me now as an adult, I look back and I'm like, wow, it's really cool. It's like such a brotherhood thing. Really, iron sharpens iron.
That's deep.
Yeah,
it's funny you mentioned wrestling and everything. That was, I'll be honest, Steve. Whenever I was in gym class, and every time it became wrestling, I'm thinking, oh my gosh,
yeah.
I'm one of them skinny real kids. You feel me? And I always
yeah.
went against the good old big boy in the class. And one time, I almost broke my heart for real because he put me in some kind of like hold. I'm like, man, I gotta tap out on this.
Yeah.
But you're right, like. It really does develop a brotherhood, especially with sports. And would you say that might be one of the main reasons that, like, I realize people are passionate about a sport,
mm-hmm.
but would you say the passion is exactly what you're stating behind, like, the family, the brotherhood?
Yeah.
Would you say if it wasn't necessarily for the brotherhood, maybe some people wouldn't even continue to pursue that sport that they're doing?
For sure.
Really?
No, that's not even a question.
Okay.
If you talk to a lot of guys when they retire from sports, the itch doesn't go away. A lot of that itch is the locker room. Like in football, for example, the guys talk about the locker room more than they talk about the game. Like they miss that camaraderie. It's like your family. Just like I'll use another really good example of that to the highest level would be Navy SEALs
mm-hmm.
or guys who are in special forces. I know a lot of those guys. And those guys, they do these missions like 6 weeks at a time, right? But high octane, where those six guys or however many guys are on your squad, that's your family. Literally, it's like ride or die. That family comes before your own family. So that brotherhood runs so deep that those guys can't even break away from it. It's like for their entire life.
Man. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, when you have like a family and a community, also known as like a mastermind that
yeah.
you can talk with just about life.
That's actually really cool. I never thought about that. That's actually what it is. So if like you're on a pro, so if you're a professional athlete, and obviously every pro fighter is on a pro MMA team, you have a pro MMA practice, you know? So I forgot what you just said. Oh, mastermind. So all those guys, they're at the top of the food chain as a pro. So when you're on the mat, you're training with each other. It's literally a physical mastermind, that practice. You know, instead of being like around a round table, you're just on a mat making each other better and
yeah.
learning the best skills from each other.
Right. Because if you're going through something, you know, the other people are feeling that.
Yeah.
Because it's like the mastermind is you're in perfect harmony. And if you're not in perfect harmony and you're out of sync, just like a relationship or a marriage or anything like that, then it's going to be out of synchronicity. Is the word. So it's just nuts. It's inspiring seeing that because I played soccer for 14 years.
Okay.
And I was a goalkeeper about halfway through like playing soccer, and I realized at the time like, man, I'm the one leading this team. You know, I'm the one. If there's a corner kick, hey, make sure you stand in front of the pole. Hey, wing, get out there. I need you. You know, yep. Like, you got to go get the ball. And there was times where I got scored, and I'm just like, man, I told you to stand right there. You know, and they were out of like sync. Yeah. So it's intriguing to me because I feel like even in business and just in life, that being in sync is such a crucial thing and a crucial principle for really moving forward. Could you agree on that?
I agree to the fullest. It's everything. It's everything. You have to sync.
You have to. So kind of, you know, walk us through a little bit more. So, you know, I know with you being out here in California, you go back to the East Coast a lot.
Yeah.
So what was your main thing for coming out? Because I know you mentioned you were very independent, you know, especially after like the divorce happened. I can relate. I was 15 when my parents got divorced.
Yeah.
And that was a big moment in my life because I realized, like, I ain't going to let that define me.
Of course.
You know? So talk about a little bit more about the independence of some of the things that you had to do, like habits that you developed, and really becoming the man that you are today. You know?
Again, and I don't want to sound so like boring when I say this, but again, it's wrestling that kept me in line because you're so accountable. Like you're in high school and you're dieting, not eating breakfast. Like I eat a salad with no meat, and like I'm skipping dinner to make weight. So I'm already developing this like extreme structure in your life. On top of having to work out before class, before school, go to practice after. So wrestling is what kept me completely in path. Where I didn't even think about my family. I didn't think about my parents getting divorced. I think about anything else. I was like obsessed. And I have a very obsessive personality. I can't just do something half-assed. So which means I have to love what I do or I just can't do it. Like I can go work for any company in the world and do amazing for 3 months, 4 months. And I get bored because I don't love it.
Right.
So I have to be passionate about whatever the fuck I do. Usually something around fitness or wrestling or fighting. So again, that's why I was really lucky to find wrestling as a kid. It really kept me on a straight path. Because you can't cheat wrestling.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You can't. It's like you versus one other person. You have a team. You're accountable. You know, you can't blame anybody. You learn so much, you know, in that regard, because right now, like this world is such a blame game victim environment. Like everyone blames everyone else for their problems. Well, if I get on the mat and wrestle someone, or I get in a cage and fight another human, and I lose, there's no one to blame but me. You could try to blame an injury, but that's your fault for stepping in the cage with an injury and having too much pride.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, because that's a lot different than a team sport.
Yes.
It's all you.
Yeah, like if you play soccer, I mean, even I played soccer my freshman year and then I transitioned to cross country instead.
Oh, okay.
Just because cross country got me better prepared for wrestling. I was already in perfect shape from the running, you know? But in soccer, because I grew up playing soccer too, it's always someone else's fault. It's like you're the forward and the goalkeeper, you know, let a ball in. It's the goalkeeper's fault. You know, the goalkeeper's, no, it's the defense's fault. And the defense, like, no, it was the captain, you know, the center. It was his fault. He let the ball. And it's like, it's always someone else's fault on a big team, you know?
Yeah, I remember the coach, he was like, hey, Nate, if you ever let a go on, just know it's not your fault. It's just the defense because they ain't even supposed to get back there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, you know, you got a point on that. But I still felt as if a goal got in. I'm like, man. Because that, I mean, the mental game is everything. Because I can really have something on your inner confidence. Once that ball gets in, once you take an L and you lose, or maybe you meant to tie the guy up in a certain position, but it just didn't go as planned, and you just weren't prepared.
Yeah, very true.
You know, how important has the mental game been for you? Like just within wrestling and fighting.
Mental game is literally everything.
Everything.
You know, like I. Just say some from a recent standpoint, you know, like I don't care. I train harder than 99% of this world. I train hard as shit. It's more from my mindset And last week I wanted to try something new, so I do a lot of fasting.
Fasting, okay.
You know, so I only eat one meal a day in the first place, but then I also do like 3-day fast and 2-day fast. And last week I did a 3-day fast last week, but this week I did a 2-day fast. And I also trained with my guy Taylor at Muscle Farm.
Okay.
And he's the best trainer in the world. Like, most people would die, like pass out before they get through it. And I said, I wonder what happened if I went in and trained, fasted for 48 hours. Could I mentally get through it? I know you have the reserves. You can do it. People that came in, you would hunt for days without eating and run and fucking catch a tiger, whatever they were go catch, you know? So you have it in you. It's all your mindset. You're so wired. I got to eat. I'm hungry. I got to eat. So I went through the workout. And I was fine. And afterwards, I told him. He was like, wait a minute, what?
Really?
You know, so it's just a mindset thing the whole time.
Holy smokes. Was that the guy whenever you were kind of like doing all them different things on your story?
Yes.
Is that the, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at that. I'm thinking, man, how the heck you're doing all that?
Yeah, and again, like I didn't eat for 2 days.
And
just
did
all that.
My gosh. But afterwards, you probably still felt, maybe you felt a little bit better, if not the same.
Yeah, I felt good. I felt really good. We have so many toxins and built up storage in our bodies that you even know about, but we never get attacked for energy because we're constantly eating. So your body's constantly using the digestive system to burn all the food as energy. So if you give this a break, your body has no choice but to use other areas of your body to create energy to get you through the day.
That's interesting.
Yeah, see, it's the only part, it's the only system that people don't give a break. Like, can we sleep? You know, we do, every other system gets a break except for our digestive system. We eat all day long.
So what would you recommend? Because I know fasting is one.
Yep.
Somebody that wants to, like, they want to get clean. Steve, I'm eating the Little Debbie's. You know, I'm eating the fast food.
Yeah.
How do I get to a point where I get rid of these toxins from my body? Like, what would be a good start for somebody?
So there's two answers to this question.
Okay. Yeah.
So number one is you can just focus on, you know, what to eat. And I always say if you can't kill it or grow it, you don't eat it. So it's really simple, right? So if you go to a restaurant, if you want to order food, then you get salmon, you get chicken, you get vegetables, you get things that aren't processed. So it makes it a lot easier. So no sugar, no dairy, no gluten, another three. So that's like part of the food intake. But I think for the mindset, intermittent fasting is everything. So starting with a longer window, so it's don't eat before 12, don't eat after 6 for like 30 days. And then you shrink it down by an hour. So that's like 1 and 6. And then it comes to 2 and 6 at month 3. And then you go into 1 meal a day. Say that'd be month 4. And then you go into the longer fasting, like 2-day, you know, 2-day fast once a month and a 3-day fast once a month. So slow and gradual process. You know, most people like will hit me up and see me fasting, like, oh, I want to try that 48-hour fast tomorrow. And I'm like, no, you could, but you're almost wasting your time because you're not going to keep up with the lifestyle. You're doing it because you want to lose weight fast. You know, yeah, you might lose 10 pounds in those 48 hours. Guess what? It's going to come right the fuck back. You know? So.
Holy.
Most people don't want to commit to that. And I still cheat here and there.
Yeah.
Like French fries are my vice.
French fries.
Like yesterday, like my one meal, I had, I went to Cheesecake Factory, had salmon over brown rice, but I still ordered a basket of fries.
Yeah, just as a
sign. You know? And because it's like my mental, I love French fries.
Yeah.
They that's like the one thing that still is in that category of no dairy, no gluten, you know, no sugar.
One meal a day, that's wow. I see how you meet, like, you know, scheduling it and kind of getting a plan. Because, yeah, if you did do that all at once, it can, you know, the whole losing weight fast and then just wanting the, like, I feel like it can just shock your body instantly as well.
Yeah.
That's not always the healthiest.
Not always, unless you've done it like in the past. But I'm a big fan of it. I think everyone should eat one meal a day. personally.
I might have to try that for real.
Don't tell the FDA that, though, because they want to make their money on this food.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Especially with the processed foods and all that.
Can you imagine if the whole country only ate one meal a day? How much money everyone would lose?
Wow.
How much money people would save?
Yeah.
And how much all these companies would lose? Crazy. It'd be a big shift in wealth.
How much less plastic would be in the oceans?
That as well.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I mean, I even think that, and so last night or 2 days ago, I had steak.
Cool.
And I don't eat a lot of meat anymore.
Okay.
And dude, it hurt. Like I ate like filet. I didn't have a choice. I was at another event, and I was hurting. I forgot. You know, when you're so clean, you give yourself like meat like that. It takes such a toll on your digestive system as far as breaking it down. So that was tough.
Jeez. So do you recommend eating meat, or is it?
I actually have to watch this documentary called Game Changers. It just came out. Focuses on like vegetarians or vegans and athletics and how they actually are so much healthier and have so much more energy. Everything is through the roof, all these stats, and I really need to watch it. And I probably, it's probably true.
Yeah.
We don't need meat. I think it was probably just a marketing thing.
Mm.
Get protein from other sources. I personally love the taste of meat, so it's to be hard for me to give it up completely.
Yeah.
I could give up chicken and steak as long as I can still have my fish.
Ooh, that's salmon you can't. Well,
yeah. Salmon.
Tuna.
Yeah, and like filet, I'd have like maybe like once a month. Like go to a restaurant, a steakhouse, you'd have it. Then the next day, though, would be like, okay, that's my day off.
Okay.
So I just like chill and digest.
Yeah.
You know?
What about somebody that likes to snack a lot? And they're like, well, Steve, I mean, when I go down and snack, all I see is, you know, chips and jerky and all
go down that aisle. Go
okay.
Right past that shit.
I got you. Yeah, that's good.
Again, like we're just programmed to eat all the time. So
yeah.
Like, I got a little hunger. Like I just got a hunger pain. So most people, they get a hunger pain. Okay, I'm gonna go and grab something. It wasn't like that back in the day. People couldn't just go to a refrigerator and open it up and grab something to snack on. People only ate once a day.
Mm.
Sometimes only like a few days. Like if you're a hunter back in the 1600s. You go out, you hunt, you kill something, you bring it back. That meat's not good for very long back then.
Right.
So they gorged on it. The next day they'd be like this. And then they would just fast for a few days and they'd go out and kill again.
Yeah. They didn't have refrigerators.
They had refrigerators. Meat goes bad after a couple of days. They would have died and got sick.
Hmm. That's it. You know, you've talked a little bit about, you know, thinking about way back then. It's intriguing to me. What is one thing when you think about like way back in like even the BC era, that kind of just blows your mind?
Yeah.
Whether it's with the health or just some of the habits that they might have had, is there any like one or maybe you have two things that come to mind that would really just intrigue, you know, people to hear about? Like, wow, they really did that. Because I know you were saying about the how they would kill and then eat it within 1 or 2 days.
Yeah.
But what? What are some other things that they might have done that intrigue you?
I'll tell you what intrigues me the most about just society in general.
Okay.
Is like just the level of you know, again, cliche, you hear emotional intelligence all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But if you really think about it, like back then, people just killed people like it was no big deal and didn't feel bad. People are public executions. Little kids are watching it like they're watching a cartoon. Whereas if you took that same stuff and put it now, people would grow up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So crazy how we evolve so emotionally connected to each other where we actually care. Sometimes we overcare about people's feelings now. Actually, we do overcare because if you kill someone, you should be executed automatically. But, you know, like you watch things, you know, people love watching Game of Thrones or TV shows like Viking, and you watch like Gladiator movie or 300. Wow. Like people gave zero fucks. Zero, you know? Whereas now is everyone cares about everything so much. Which, I mean, it's good. You should have emotional intelligence. I mean, I do, especially. But it's just crazy to see how it was back then. Big time. What else can I say? So vegetarians, something cool about that. people always say, oh, I could never be a vegetarian, I could never be a vegetarian. And I say, what if you had to go in the backyard and kill your own cow to eat? Now what are we talking about? Could you do it? I guarantee you more than 80% of our country are probably vegetarians right now, because most people aren't doing that.
Yeah.
It's too much work. People feel too emotionally attached to the animal. They won't be able to kill it.
It's like a pet to them, you know?
Yeah. So that's how it's, that's ignorance is bliss. What you don't see doesn't hurt you. You just, oh, I got filet. You don't think about, oh, well, it came from this farm. This cow was killed. Da, da, da. But you, if you don't see it, you can't feel it. You know, which is not to go on a rant, which is why I have an issue with so many influencers now, because it's hard. A lot of influencers now are using their hardships from their past as their platform. So, like, I went from homeless to CEO, or I went to jail, and now I own this company, like all those kind of things. And for me, I don't give a fuck because I haven't lived that. I don't know what it's like to go to jail. So how can I relate to this guy? I've never been homeless. So how can I understand what it feels like to be homeless? So that doesn't influence me. Like, I feel like those kind of people should only be able to influence people that have gone through that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the stories get so old. I've heard it so many times.
Because
I have a lot of friends that do it, and I have a lot of respect for them, and I love them, and I'm proud of what they've become. But I'm actually sick of their fucking content. Like, how many times do I have to hear you went to jail and now you're successful? Okay, I get it. Cool. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You can't do it for so long. The only person that gets, like, for example, Gary Vee.
Yeah.
He's the one guy that truly resonates, but he, like me, doesn't have any, like, story that, oh my God, I had such a hardship and look at me now.
Mm.
He's always been positive from day one. He's never fucked up. He has so endless amount of content. He doesn't have to fall back on, like, the pity me, now look at me. You know?
And he keeps it real.
He keeps it real.
Yeah, he says it how it is. I mean, now you're right, definitely, because there's a lot of speakers and you know, motivational people out there that they say that. It's funny you mentioned that, because, I mean, you know, you don't even want to follow them anymore. Because it's just like, it's the same exact content.
Every single day.
And, I mean, it might be a different message,
mm-hmm.
but if it's the same exact thing. And so what do you think about, you know, what if somebody gets motivated by that? You know, like somebody, and they don't necessarily relate to their story. Like, because I'm sure there's a lot of people like that out there.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't homeless, but I'm still motivated by somebody that is a homeless, you know, speaker or things like that. What do you think of that kind of
viewpoint? I mean, so that, and obviously that's, you know, the silver lining. You know, so that person is going to be able to, there's some people out there that, I don't know, they just, like, for example, I have never been to war, right? But David Goggins runs right through me. He was, you know, Navy SEAL, changed his life, and look at him now. I don't know what it's like to even shoot a gun or kill somebody, but for some reason, his message speaks to me. Whereas if he was the same guy and his message was, I went to jail first, and now I'm running these ultra marathons, like, that doesn't do anything for me. It might do something for somebody else. You know, you hear a lot of another good one, gang banger to CEO or something, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and again, I respect it. Like, that's a very hardship, but how can I really understand the life of a gangbanger?
Yeah, for real.
You know what I'm saying? So it's hard for me to relate to that kind of person. So they cannot influence me. It's really hard. The only person that can influence me is someone that I'm already emotionally connected with, as far as, like, someone who is a wrestler or someone that already has done something that I've done and I can relate to. Then you really feel their pain of what they've gone through, because you've actually felt some of that as well. You can kind of put your foot in their shoe.
Mm.
You know?
No, that's powerful. I'm curious. This just came to mind.
Yeah.
Do you find it, because there's a lot of quote unquote young influencers out there now. Do you find it easy to resonate with some of the younger influencers? For example, let's say somebody that's like 20, they're giving like some motivational speech. Do you personally, from like personal opinion, find that as motivating, or does it take a little bit extra for that?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one, because I'm gonna have to go with like a 75-25 no over yes. But that 25 is a strong 25% because I have so much respect for a kid who's 19 or 20 years old. I don't care where they came from. They're so young. They don't have experience, but they're still willing to go over that line and put themselves out there in the spotlight and not give a fuck what anyone says. And be a self-starter and be an entrepreneur and do all the things that you're not supposed to do. So for that, I love it. So I remember when I was in college, I graduated in 2004 at Pace. I still remember today, like senior year, you walk in your classroom and some people are saying, oh my God, I got a job with Goldman Sachs or I got a job with this. I'm making 40 grand a year. And I'm like, thinking back of how excited people were, that never excited me. You know what I mean? Because, like, you know, I grew up in an era, again, I'm 38, where it was, you got to go to college, you got to have security, you have to do this, you have to do that. And literally, though, within like 5 or 6 years, I think for the 2007, like all the crisis that happened, entrepreneurship became so much more important because it showed that our country isn't stable and we could all lose everything at any given moment. Mm-hmm. Security isn't as valuable as doing what you want to do and what you love. So a lot of these, so I, as I'm talking, I'm starting to backtrack a little bit. I actually really do respect like the 20-year-old kids, you know, because they're doing what the fuck they want to do. Regardless of what their parents have done or telling them what to do, regardless of what other friends are doing, because they're literally the black sheep to be able to do that. You know, and if you're 20 years old and you're getting in front of a room of like, you know, 50, 30 or 40-year-olds that are successful, so you're already like not frowned upon, but you can't get that same kind of respect. So there's no fucking way.
Right. Like
when I got my master's degree, for example, the program I got into at Albertus Magnus, it was an executive MBA program.
Okay.
So to get into it, you had to prove that it was 3 or 4 years of managerial experience, like top level managerial experience, because they clump you in cohorts in the class. You all work it together for 2 years, develop this relationship. So they don't want kids fresh out of college. So a friend of mine owned a video store, like a franchise.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, man, I want to get into this program. So I'll lie for you. I'll just tell them you're my COO. No big deal, you know? I think it was my GM.
Okay.
So I put on my resume, and I got in.
Wow.
I remember still walking into the class that first day. I'm 24 years old. I was like 23. And everyone else is 35, 40. You know, you have like the VP of the Exxon Mobil there. You had this person, that person. Like the this guy who had owned all these Jackson Hewitts, and I walk in and look at me like, that kid's not on our team. You know what I mean? I could already tell. So we all had to figure out who we wanted to work with. I actually felt like that kid who got picked last, you know?
Yeah.
And I had to prove myself. And I remember after our first project, it was like done. I graduated 3.9. I was like top of the class. I just had to outwork everybody. You know, but I'm very good at picking up on stuff. Like, put me in a room with four people, I can pick out so much from them and just learn. Like, I learned so much from that crew, more so than the book. You don't learn shit from books, like anybody says. I know you're reading a Sam Walton book, but I don't read books anymore.
I don't.
I listen to podcasts, I listen to people's opinions, I digest it, and I use it how I want to use it.
Yeah. Steve, that's a great point that you brought up, because people think that books are the only way you can like learn, or just a podcast, but there's so many ways you can learn.
Oh my God.
Just by immersion. I mean, the people that you hang out with, I mean, people be like,
yeah,
hey, yo, Steve, try to get a pizza, man. Try to invite your friends to
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, people see Albert Pujols on your story. Hey, Steve, man, I'm going to slide in your DMs real quick, you know?
Yeah.
That's just how people are. But by immersing yourself, I mean, that's way
gotta immerse yourself.
Like, better than books.
Yeah, I had dinner with A-Rod.
Oh, good old Alex.
3 weeks
yeah.
ago in New York, and I always had negative perception of him just because of all the stuff he's gone through, you know, media, it's all you know. But I actually spent 4 hours with him, and I got to know him. And he's such a genuine, humble guy. He might be humble because of all things that he went through, it humbled him. But at the end of the day, when we were talking about business and mentors, he said, like, he would go and meet somebody like Warren Buffett and say, listen, like, you know, I want you to explain it to me like I'm a fourth grader, right? So he put his pride to the side so he could actually take the time to learn from these people. And obviously him on Shark Tank, he like knows his shit because he took the time, put his ego aside and learned from everybody. And that's a really important thing. You know, you learn way more from people than you do books. Way more. You know, so, yeah, so I got a newfound respect for that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Red Sox fan, so.
That's,
you know what
that's
I mean?
A tough one.
You think you broke my heart one or two times, but. But yeah, it's important. I mean, you have to learn from other people. That's the most important thing. That's why social media is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who don't understand social media are like, you know, people in small town USA that don't want to grow and learn from other people. They're okay being old school in their box. And with no growth, where social media, if you can go and meet so many people, learn so many different things. I learn so much every single day. I've had more conversations in the last 10 years, or yeah, last 10 years, than probably like my in-laws had their entire life. You know what I mean? Because they lived in the same bubble, around the same friends, the same family, the same job. You can't grow. At some point, it just stops.
Mm.
You know, whereas if you keep on learning from people, it never stops.
Yeah.
Like, fuck retirement. I don't even know what that word even is.
Yeah.
There's no way I could retire, ever.
The greats don't retire.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Michael Jordan, he's not retired, though. Like, he's not doing basketball, but he's
working.
Still doing other things in his life.
Yeah, he's still doing endorsements and
you know?
Engagements and all that stuff.
Yeah. That's powerful. Yeah, good. Good old, A-Rod, and I can see that with him being very deep.
Mm.
So I feel like a lot of people, they just tend to look at the surface and
yeah.
the stats, the highlight reel.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go down deep.
Very true. You have to remember, when you're like a legend in your industry, and you go to someone else who's a legend in their industry, and you go to them, you're like, hey, listen, I don't understand this. Can you teach me? This person is like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I can give value to this legend.
Yeah.
So they actually genuinely want to help you and make you a better person. It's like, oh my God, I got to help Ava start his first business.
Yeah.
You know? It's a big deal. It's like if I don't think who that would have, but it's like if Warren Buffett went up to Alex, hey, Alex, man, I don't know how to hit a baseball. Alex fucking would probably get a hard on, but yo, let's go to the field right now, you know? Cause,
yeah,
because there's such a level of respect for the other side of that fence, like real, recognized, real, you know?
That's really, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I saw an Instagram video last night. Will Smith.
Yeah.
He's just with Bill Gates.
Okay.
He went to the, he's like, I'm actually at the, you know, real Microsoft office, you know? And it was intriguing because in the video, I mean, it wasn't like a super deep video, it was something just for the media.
Yeah.
But I could see that. Will, because I mean, Will Smith, one of the top actors, you know, of all time with what he does.
Agreed.
Right? And with where he's at, him doing very similar to Warren Buffett, you know, was asking him how to get hit a baseball. And it's funny because I got to see Will Smith, just how he reacted. I could tell he was very different compared to being on like a set or just being around like his normal buddies. And it's like when you get to that level of just not just greatness, but that deep, deep greatness.
Yeah.
Where you got people that have your dog on, you know, Microsoft and all your computers, and you meet somebody like a Bill Gates. Holy cow. Same with Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
And everybody buys stuff off Amazon now.
Yeah. But you don't realize Jeff Bezos feels that same exact way about other people and other industries that he wishes he could be great at.
Right.
You know, it's like, rappers want to be basketball players, and basketball players want to be rappers, and
that's so true.
You know, there's just, you know, camaraderie of respect between different industries.
And you know, it's funny, Steve. I feel as if a lot of society, they overlook some of these deep business models of today.
Yeah.
If you ask a kid, hey, tell me a little bit about Elon Musk. Let me Google real quick, because they just don't know.
Yeah.
Same with the Jeff, same with the Steve Jobs, same with the, you know, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett. Who the heck is Warren Buffett?
Yeah.
And it's funny because if you're listening and you're young and you know who these people are, you're doing something, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You're off to the right track.
Yeah.
It's not as if, okay, well, not, I know who 2 Chainz is. I know who, you know, Tyga, Eminem. That's great, and much respect to them. But if you really want to know on a deeper aspect, on going to the next level, on a deeper scale, yes, if you're a rapper and you want to be in the music industry, that's great. Yeah. Study those. But don't count out the ones that have done bigger and better things. Henry Ford, he's gone. But guess what? He introduced the automobile. Mm-hmm. Now we can drive cars and have phones from a Steve Jobs at the same time.
Yep.
So it just blows my mind because I feel like a lot of youth and millennials tend to overlook that a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you.
But yeah, man, it's just crazy. I guess in terms of the fitness level and everything, Steve, so... let's say somebody wants to, they're getting into fighting or they want to get into it, whether it's wrestling or even MMA.
Yeah.
What would you recommend starting out would be great for them to really adapt to begin the journey?
It depends what their goal is. Okay. If it's for like, you know, self-defense and empowerment and all that, if you're a child, it's wrestling. If you're an adult, it's jiu-jitsu.
Oh,
jiu-jitsu for me is perfect because it doesn't matter how big or small, how big you are, man or woman, you can choke somebody out, you can break a limb. You know, it's the best way. Everyone ends up on their back in a fight no matter what. You're able to defend yourself, and it just builds confidence knowing that, hey, you can choke somebody out. Now, you can start jiu-jitsu as a kid too, but jiu-jitsu isn't nearly as structured from a competitive level as a child as wrestling. Wrestling is a whole nother breed of work hard. Jiu-jitsu is like, it's more, do work hard in jiu-jitsu, but it's a slower pace. You grab it on the gi, it's more technical, it's not a grind, it's a different kind of grappling. You know, so wrestling kids, jiu-jitsu for adults.
Okay, that's interesting.
Not even a question.
Really?
Yes.
Is anybody too old to do that?
No, not these guys, 78 years old, still rolling jiu-jitsu, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
And it's good to learn, like, just self-defense in general, especially
it's everything.
Being in today's world, you just never know what can happen.
You never know.
You know, I mean, you get influenced by a movie, and you come out like a whole different person. You're like, man, I want to do all these different, like, bad things. And it's like, what? You know? And it's true. It happens.
It does.
It's the influence that it has. But man, it's crazy. But, man, Steve, kind of, you know, tell the audience, what do you got going on now, like business-wise? What are you working on that you would like for them to really know about?
Yeah.
As well as, you know, where can they follow you on social media?
Yeah, I would say, you know, my company, Smash Global. You know, I started it after I stopped fighting. I'd say the story all the time. I'd tell it to you too.
Yeah.
My last fight was in Melbourne, Australia.
Wow.
There is 8-0. I was undefeated. And I fought the number one kid. They flew me out to Melbourne. And I lost. I thought I was ready, but it got me mentally.
Mm.
Something just wasn't right. Like, I wasn't myself when I got in the ring. It was more, I gave him too much respect, which isn't my personality. So when you give someone too much respect, you kind of go in and you feel them out. What are they going to do to me? If I throw this punch, what are they going to do back? And I went out, kick, kick, punch, punch. And I threw a lazy hook, and he threw a right hand at the same exact time. And just, whoosh, and I just remember backing up, going against the ropes, doing an uppercut, split my gloves, and I just dropped. And I wasn't knocked out, but I still remember I was on all fours. Now, these are things that you can't practice for.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what's going to happen. You know, you can't practice for getting shell-shocked and a crowd of thousands of people screaming. Like, you just can't mimic it. So that's the first time it's happened to me. So, I mean, I dropped. I'm on all fours. My nose is pouring blood. I've never seen my blood before. The crowd is so loud because we're the main event in Australia. I'm actually in my corner. So my coach is yelling and screaming at me. The ref is behind me saying, improve your position. And he's behind me just throwing punches. And it sounds like gunshots going off in the back of my head. I couldn't even hear myself think. And before you know it, I'm just like this. And the ref just stopped it. You know, and I still look back at him. I'm like, all I had to do was turn over and pull guard and get my composure back and hold him. But I just froze. I've never been in that position where I was shell-shocked and I was thousands of people screaming and my blood is pouring.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those moments that I wish I could take back, you know, but it's what put me where I am now. So fast forward that night, I'm back in my hotel room. Everyone else was with us on our team. They went out and partying, which you're supposed to do. I would normally do that too.
Okay.
But I took the loss very hard. It was my first one. I was by myself, no family, no friend, just my coach and two other teammates. And I remember being in my room with super anxiety, feeling depressed about myself, you know, poor me, reliving the fight. I said, that's over for me. I'm 32 years old. I've had three knee surgeries. I've had shoulder surgery. My son then was one. I'm like, I got to figure out what I'm going to do next in my life. And I'm not too old to do anything. I'm 32 years old. No, I was 33 years old. And coming from a Wall Street background, having two masters, I knew I could do so much more than just fight. You can't fight forever. Even if I want to keep on fighting, it was, what are the chances of me getting to the UFC, being the next George St. Pierre at the time, or Conor, and now, you're talking like 10 more fights.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a two-year process. I didn't have that drive anymore at 33 years old. There's no fucking way.
Yeah.
If I was 22, different story, plenty of time. So I said to myself, what can I do to stay in the sport and make it better? So it was literally just open up my own gym, have my own fight team, and go that route, or become a Dana White and just do something on the promotional side, start my own organization and just do it different. And I said, what's my sport lacking? The only thing that hasn't flourished is the class of the sport.
Okay.
It's still a very, and I mean, no disrespect to anybody, still a NASCAR crowd. You know, boxing is very Formula One. People come in with suits, wives and gowns. It's a social experience.
Sure.
Whereas MMA, you go watch the UFC, it's tap out t-shirts, it's Bud Light, it's rah, 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 bleed, bleed, bleed. Just a different kind of crowd. So I compare, you know, boxing is Formula One, MMA is NASCAR. How do we get the Formula One crowd to come watch MMA live?
Mm.
So I do it in a ballroom setting, cage in the middle, 25 to 30 tables, surround the cage like a wedding. I honor a bunch of celebrities that night. I have five pro fights. And then the ticket price point, what's most important, it's high enough it phases out literally MMA community for the most part.
Okay.
The blue collars, it really drives the celebrities, the influencers, and the people actually want to network and engage with others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because MMA is like a $50 ticket. $50 ticket gets you a $50 crowd. $1,000 ticket gets you a $1,000 crowd. Like if someone says, Steve, I don't want to go to this event. I'm like, how much is it? And they say it's $100. I'm like, $100 is like that number where it's enough for me to not want to go. I know I'm not going to get any value, you know, from who's going to be there. But if someone said, yo, Steve, this event is like $1,000, you want to go? I'm like, dude, who's going to fuck me be there? That means you have 200 people in a room that all spend $1,000. Dude, that's 200 legit contacts that you can possibly meet that night. So you go, you watch fights, but your job should actually be to return on your investment of that night, which is meeting as many people as possible and changing information, because $1,000 is nothing in the grand scheme of networking. If you get 10 new contacts that are in the higher network demographic, just one of those being a new relationship long-term, you're getting your money 100 times over.
Absolutely. 1,000 could turn into 100,000.
Yeah, so it's also a way for people to kind of buy their way into a circle as well. $1,000, again, isn't an exorbitant amount of money, but use it properly, you can do well. I use a good analogy, you know, Lamborghinis, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So many people have them. But most people don't realize that they're leasing them.
Right.
So you can lease a Lamborghini for like $2,500, $3,000 a month, right? A Huracan. Well, that seems like fucking so stupid to spend that much money on a car, but if you spend $3,000 a month on a Lamborghini, now you're in a circle of other Lamborghini owners, the car meets and car drives, you're in a whole nother circle.
Wow.
So 3,000 times 12 months, $36,000 you spend plus insurance, but all the people you're gonna meet that have Lamborghinis are all millionaires. You just bought your way into a circle for the cost of what it is to go to college for a year. You really think about it. Also, you have to be able to afford it in the first place. But that's like one of the best investments, if you ask me. You know, because people want to be in those circles. Those circles are important.
That's a major E, my brother. I'm thinking,
yeah.
I never looked at it from that perspective before, to be honest.
Yeah.
And seeing that, like, it makes sense, though, you know, because whether it's buying the ticket for $1,000 or getting that car, like you said, you're surrounding yourself with that group of people that are doing that.
Yeah.
And that alone is because that's deep, bro. Because a lot of people are like, Nate, Steve, how do I get surrounded around people that are doing, whether it's better, and I'm from like a small town, but they got money to invest. Do what you just said.
Invest in yourself. You don't have to invest in anything. You invest in yourself. Take 50 grand. That 50 grand you invest in yourself between getting a Lamborghini and spending money on events and pulling up to valet, which costs $10 for dinner, or parking it on Rodeo Drive for a couple hours with like your company sticker on the back. And people are all going to see that. And they equate a Lamborghini with success at the highest level. You just bought your way in. No one's looking at your bank account. You'd be fucking broke. No one knows he had a Lamborghini. That's all they see.
Yeah.
And that's the world we live in. Post all that shit on social media. You tag other Lamborghini owners that you see. They all start following you. Now you just bought your way into a very exclusive community. Very exclusive community.
Wow. Would you say that's one of the most, like, the underlying factor behind a lot of these younger kids, for example?
Yeah.
You know, they're making a lot of YouTube money, making a lot of social media, you know, online e-commerce, Shopify store money. And they get a Lamborghini. Would you say that that is the underlying reason that they do it, what you just mentioned? Or do you think there might be something else that pulls them as well?
No, I think the younger kid, it's all ego.
Okay.
It's more show off for sure, which is fine. Because listen, I'm not the same person I was when I was 20.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm 38. I'm not the same person I was when I was 30. I look at things different. They're looking at it just being flashy. I look at flash. I'm flashy and I want to be, but not all the time. And every time I'm flashy, I have a motive to of why I'm being flashy. You know, like I said, and I use a Lamborghini as an example. You know, if I was 21, I'd buy a Lamborghini because I want to fucking drive 140 in red line and do stupid shit and race people and get girls. Whereas now, I would get a Lamborghini because I want to go do the Gold Rush rally and spend $10,000 and literally spend a whole week driving across the country with all these other people who own exotic cars. You know, and you're going to get your money back doing that. It's a fact. So that's you see a lot of the older guys now, not older, but like 35 to 45, 50, they're all doing that. They're all going out and buying like a McLaren or a Huracan, doing these car rallies all the time and building this little circle of trust within the car community. That's a take community in the car community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just using that as an analogy because it's very, you know, Lamborghini owners and Ferrari owners. And,
yeah.
You know, you want to really be seen.
It's like you're a little tribe.
Yeah.
And back to where we first started, it's like that brotherhood.
Exactly.
It's like that mastermind again because they're both. No, you can just build.
Remember, one person with a Lamborghini is cool, right? But 20 people all with Lamborghinis together, it's like, holy shit.
Oh my gosh.
That's a squad I want to be around.
It's like,
you know,
the Fast and Furious squad, bro.
And they all go do these car rallies together, and everyone that sees them, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
So it's like and I use this example, everyone's always like, I want to be in the 1%. And if you're not in the 1% now, the chances of you ever being in the 1% is pretty much impossible. Unless you have some tech startup that goes for billions, it's a unicorn. But you can take 10 people that are all successful and collectively be in the 1% as a group and do everything the 1% does.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the community and building that circle is so fucking important.
That's deep, bro.
Everything.
That's like you said, everything. That's for all aspects of life. My gosh. Oh, man, brother, you got me thinking a lot over here now. I'll tell you that. I appreciate you sharing that, Steve. Where can I want to be respectful of your time, of course. Where can the audience, you know, and the listeners follow you on social media, you know, your website and everything like that?
Yeah, so my website, www.smashglobal.com. No Twitter. I'm not big on Facebook anymore.
Okay.
So, you know, Facebook's friends and family. But Instagram, I have a Smash Global page. And then also my personal, Steve Orozco, or you can search Mr. Smash, the alter ego, just like Nate the Great. Really important. Anyone wants to be an influencer, first step in crossing over that line is coming up with an alter ego. and accepting it and not caring what anybody fucking thinks. Because then at some point you're just so used to saying Nate the Great.
Yeah.
People are just start calling Nate the Great too.
Happens all the time.
But it's hard to give yourself this name. I'm Nate the Great. I'm Mr. Smash.
Yeah.
You're like, really? And you're going to get that from time to time. But at some point it just becomes natural. And you just are that person.
It's true.
It's your alter ego.
Yeah.
And I love it. I think alter egos are everything.
No, I love it too. Every time I meet somebody, Steve, you know, they expect like a first and last name.
Yeah.
I'm like, Nate the Great, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
And they look at me and they're like, wow, what'd you say?
Yeah.
I said Nate the Great.
Yeah.
And then they're just like so shocked by that.
Yeah.
Because like you said, the alter ego, you know, if we say the normal, like, we're not normal.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be a little bit insane.
Yeah, of course. That's, well, why are you so different?
Yeah, literally. Anyway, Steve, now I'll attach the links in the description for you guys to check Steve out. Okay, he's doing incredible things. I've personally gained a ton of insight just on this interview and this episode, for real. And Steve, I couldn't be more appreciative of you just sharing that wisdom and everything that you've done, brother. So yeah, man, I appreciate your time being on the show, brother. Thank you, man.
Thanks for listening to the Roots of Success podcast. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review. I really appreciate that, as well as a like and a subscribe. Stay connected between shows by following me on Instagram @NateTheGreat. And remember, guys, success starts here. Keep winning. Nate the Great signing off.